all that channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Dappletown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stubble and Mike Moncada, episode 53, Joe Hill's Horns, the story of a man who takes being horny a little too far. And now, Necronomapod.
We just read this book right down, didn't we?
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Well, you read it, and I read it, and then it was done.
I tried to read non-horror things just to, because the sure way to dementia is to not step up your game and expose yourself to different things.
So. Good idea. It's a very good idea.
That's a hint from Eloise.
Hint from Eloise.
And I always put baking soda and club soda on wine stains.
And use peanut butter to get chewing gum out of your hair.
To get vampire blood stains out of your hair.
Hints from Eloise.
How do I clean these dusty bandages? Signed, Fretful Mummy.
I have garlic hanging all over my house to keep the vampires away, but it just stinks, Eloise. What can I do? Use garlic pills.
Anyhow. Joe Hill!
Joe Hill!
Say, what's all this fuss about Joe Hill?
All this fussing about Joe Hill.
Let's fuss in a few then.
we almost started our podcast reading and discussing Joe Hill's first novel, Heart-Shaped Box.
Which, wait, what are you talking about?
We almost started. I mean, our first book was actually
that was in our first cycle,
World War Z. But I think this is our second book.
It was.
Yeah, Heart-Shaped Box was. Yeah,
I thought that was in cycle two.
I don't think so. Actually, I know so.
Or yeah. Series one. Should we go with cycles or series or seasons?
I
want to do the British
thing. I like series.
Series. So yeah. That was in series one.
That was in series one. Aren't we still in series one?
No, we're in series three. We're in our third year.
Oh, we can just call them year then.
No, I like series. I like right. Series.
Annual
or cycle.
Annual series. And it's taken this long for him to come up with a second novel. That's not to say that he's been sitting by doing nothing. He's got comic book work going on. He's got
good short stories.
Lots of short stories.
I forget what that book was called.
20th Century Ghosts.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And just being Stephen King's son and answering or deflecting questions about what's it like being Stephen King's son is probably a full-time job. But here we are reading his second novel. I bet you he just doesn't grant very many interviews because he's sick of being asked that.
I bet anybody worth their salt interviewing him would not ask
that. Yeah.
I would be ashamed.
I would be ashamed to be in the audience where some rube asks him that question.
All right, so,
Okay, the book.
The book. is this really only his second novel?
As far as I can tell, unless he's got another damn pseudonym. Like his daddy did.
All right, so this book.
Okay.
What about this book?
I started this book and was immediately pulled in and loved it. I loved it. And I was ready. I was starting to worry near the end that I was going to stop loving it. Why is that? Well, I'll talk about the first part. The opening bit when he wakes up after an evening of doing terrible things, which they don't explain until the very end of the book what those terrible things are.
Well, no, you know kind of right away.
You do when you don't.
Because he talked about pissing on Mary and...
Yes, that and that. But he doesn't remember going to the treehouse and setting it afire and that kind of stuff.
No, you don't know that, but you know he did something.
Yeah, but it's and also in terrorizing himself.
He did a bad thing.
Yeah. But yeah, you know some of them, but you don't know all of them until the very end.
Okay, so you...
So he wakes up, he has horns on his head, damn. Which is kind of cute and it's easy to put, and that's a good way it's a good thing to write on the back cover of the book so you can get people to buy it and take it home.
A man wakes up with horns on his head. Yeah.
But the thing that's really interesting and I thought was fantastic was it opens up whenever he's in the presence of other people, it opens up them to giving free expression to their worst nature. What they really think sometimes. And it starts kind of slow, you know, he's in this relationship.
His horns are small.
Yeah. And it starts kind of slow, and the first person he meets is his girlfriend. She...
No.
Yeah, she kind
of... Oh, his girlfriend.
Yeah, right. She kind of tells him...
or whatever she is.
She kind of tells him what she really thinks about him and that she really wants to eat this whole box of donuts and blah, 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 blah. But it rapidly accelerates and goes to visit the local priest and gets an earful there. Oh, my God. And
he also finds out what people really think of him.
And the people really think of him. And then, you know, as if he hasn't really learned, he goes and visits his family and he gets a horrible glimpse into what his grandmother, who he loves, really thinks about him and her life. And then his mom and then his dad and then his brother. And it's just this... litany of hard, hard truths.
And what you don't really know is if he getting the truth, or is he getting a version of the truth, mm-hmm. or is this a projection of his own self-loathing?
You don't know. I mean, he kind of explains. Really. He said they're giving free expression to their worst nature.
He's guessing.
There's also their best nature.
But he's guessing because he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't.
Well, but when he touches them. He knows.
He knows things that they've done.
Yes.
But he doesn't know
what they think about him. Yeah.
I mean, he does know, but they tell him, but
yeah.
He's part of this interaction.
Yes, and I'm not saying that what they say to him is the only truth. I'm saying that they're just giving giving vent to their worst nature.
And it doesn't
but not any of their good nature.
No, but
so
it does
very distorted.
But it also does express what he thinks of himself.
Hmm.
I mean, deep down.
Yes, you know, I would say that. I say that's true. Yeah,
his own worst fears about himself.
He's got a ton of that, and he gives himself over to that. He becomes the devil, or a devil,
a little devil.
And then you get a chunk of backstory, which is very interesting, and that's where the characters really develop because
there's also a mystery going on.
Yeah, and there's a mystery, and it's solved in stages. There are actually multiple mysteries. The last mystery that gets solved really is why do he and Marin have this big fight the night that she dies?
Right.
What's
her motivation?
What is her motivation? I thought for sure she'd gone to college and become a lesbian.
I did too.
I was thinking that. And that was the moment I thought, oh, you know, I can see why you'd want to do that. And yeah, that's really devastating. And yeah, and she's found out some things about herself that, you know, that he just doesn't need to know yet. And blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh dear. Well, sure, that's a way to motivate that big fight. But when you find out the real reason,
yeah.
Then I was totally back in the book's court. I thought, oh, that's much worse. It's much more selfless what she did. And
he knows.
And then, yeah. So, anyway.
So it grabbed you and you...
Yeah, and so, yeah, so it grabbed me in the beginning with this, which essentially made this like a really great short story. And then it pulls you out and takes you back 10-15 years to when they're teenagers and they first meet.
Yeah, and didn't it kind of remind you a little bit of Stand By Me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And then it starts bouncing around a little bit. You get other, you get, you know, the night of the murder. You get back again in real time. And I thought it was very well plotted. The book pulled you
and
in.
There were multiple perspectives and
storylines. It enabled him to really, really develop all these characters. And so you really felt for them all. And the one that I thought was the thinnest, which was, and this is going to, apologizing already because I cannot remember her name. I think it might have been Gail or his girlfriend.
I want to say Griselda.
I'm going to let you do that, but I'm going to register that it's not her name.
It's something like that, though.
It starts with a G.
Griselda.
Anyway, she's kind of a, she's almost like a throwaway character. She's just kind of a, she's just this slutty young girl in parts of the book. She's the kind of the local barfly girl who, you know, is blowing a guy in the parking lot. It's one of the first things you find out about her. And then her character really deepens. And our main character, Ignatius, finds some real compassion for her. And at the end, she's kind of saved. The Joe Hill as a writer is generous enough to pick up what could have easily been a very minor throwaway character who could have just driven off at the end, picks her back up and gives her a future, gives her something more. I thought that was great, and without even being cheap, you know. So
now that you've explained the plot, Mr.
Stoffel. Well, so what did you think?
I was drawn in.
Yep.
Because of the whole, what's these horns and what's mm-hmm. going to happen?
Sure.
And it reminded me of Kafka a little bit.
Yeah, I know. What did Gregor Samsa awoke one morning after fitful dreams to find himself transformed into an enormous vermin? Almost exactly. I mean, it's got to be consciously echoing that, the beginning of the Metamorphosis.
I really liked it. I really liked the book.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I liked the book. Mm-hmm. I think it needed an editor.
Really?
At some point, I started to get to that freaking point. Because he kept turning it.
Yeah.
Just when you think the story was needing to be over, he kept turning it again.
Yeah.
And I think he didn't
need... And coming at it from a different angle.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, you know what? Too many angles. It got towards the middle of the end.
Okay.
It just felt that way. Kind of after he went out to the...
Foundry?
Yeah.
There was a lot...
There was a lot of stuff. It's like, yeah.
You know,
I think he was searching for a way to end it somehow.
Yeah.
And he wasn't... you know, he blew so many things open that he didn't know where
to... How to close them. I think you're right.
And he does sort of... The one problem I have had with this book... I always like to put up problems.
Uh-huh.
Is that his...
I had some too, just... But go ahead.
His, Ig is a anti-hero. You know, he's set up because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And you find out a good guy... When pushed to his limit, it, you know, is just as, as gruesome in his personality as
personality,
everybody
motivations,
right?
Yeah.
So that I appreciated that.
Uh huh.
And then, you know, all the sort of thought character in his life, his brother, his mother, the girlfriend, you know, those people were, they had dimensions to them and, it was both good and bad.
Yeah.
The bad people were bad.
Yes.
And there was no nuance to it.
It was kind of funny, yeah. We were talking about Letourneau?
Lee Turneau.
Lee Turneau, yeah. And hit the cop, Eric.
Hannity.
Yeah. Because he gets glimpses into their thinking. Hannity, I don't think ever gets you never get really any explanation as to why he is so
He's just like the TV bald guy who's always
so stupidly vicious.
Yeah.
Letourneau, you get a little bit.
You get it in his backstory.
In the backstory.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But you don't get it in the main story in the present time. You don't get the nuances of that at all.
No, he's irredeemable. Yeah, well, he's absolutely irredeemable. And the explanation for his evil is basically he went to sleep with a concussion and burned out his moral center, apparently. Right. Never go to sleep when you have a concussion.
Well, you will burn out your moral center. And because he went to be kind, and the kindness was greeted with
slash across the face or whatever.
You know?
Yeah,
which, you know, I can understand, but
yeah, well, you know.
It's a cat.
Fucking cat.
It's just a cat.
He should have known.
He should have.
It was a cat.
And then it's also that, you know, his mother was a shrew and his...
Yes.
Speaking of his mother, my favorite line, and I'm probably not going to remember correctly, is that she says something like, she compares him to a box that she got. She bought something off the internet or off the online or
TV. Yeah. And it was nothing in it but packing peanuts.
Yeah. You're just like that box.
You're nothing.
All pretty on the outside, but nothing but packing peanuts.
Yeah.
Something like that. It was my favorite.
It's kind of hard.
There's nothing in you.
Maybe that's what, what you're responding to is something that, as a fault in his character, his characterization is really conscious on Joe Hill's part, is that, I mean, he's addressing it right there. It's like, there's nothing inside of him. There's no character there. And maybe that is what makes him evil. There is just nothing. Maybe having a balance in your character is what makes you a
normal person,
well-rounded character. Yeah. If you're just unmotivated evil, you're pretty.
But it becomes a little. The problem with that is it becomes a little bit predictable. You kind of know right from the beginning, this is a bad guy. Will the main character figure it out?
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the way it's written or the way it was read. You kept getting a foreshadowing because he acted so, you know, he did all these good things.
Yeah.
And it just didn't jive with what you were being told about him. And so...
Well, he's, the character is...
And it made him kind of boring. That's what I'm getting to. It was so predictable in his wickedness and his lack of...
Mm-hmm.
His lack of conscience, that it was kind of boring because that's kind of been done.
Yeah, well, that character, the character of Letourneau, reminded me very strongly of a kind of a stock character that another horror writer uses all the time.
Stephen King.
Stephen
well,
King.
Who does he remind you of?
What?
Who does he like? He's the Walking Man.
Yeah, he reminds me of the Walking Man. He reminds me of the bad guy in Bag of Bones. You know, that shriveled, wealthy guy who wants to destroy this young couple. Any of a number of characters in Stephen King books, and they're great characters. I mean, they're really frightening because of that unmotivated evil. Or not unmotivated. I shouldn't say unmotivated. It's insufficiently motivated.
It's thinly motivated.
Yeah, the evil that they wreak is more than has been given to them. I mean, they haven't. It's not an equal measure to the cause of their whatever their problem happens to be. So, but anyway, I thought.
And I kind of thought because of that, that his evil deeds were so over the top.
Yeah. Well, just as...
And frankly, one more thing. That's where I got a little bored was with the killing of the mother. I'm like, oh, come on. You know?
I thought that was pretty astonishing, actually.
I was bored with that.
Really?
Yeah, I was bored.
I wasn't. I thought that was...
I thought it was just so gratuitous that it just bored me.
It was one of the reasons you read a horror novel is to just shake your head in disbelief at something so horrible that somebody has thought up and put down on paper. That was pretty horrible. Because it was so mundane. It's just like, you know, just keeping her under blankets and with the air conditioning off and not giving her enough water so that she's slowly just sort of desiccated in her dementia. Oh, so evil.
Yeah, it was pretty evil. Just because he wanted to see if he could do it.
Yeah, because he wanted to see how far he was willing to go, what his limits were. Pretty far. His death was, I don't know, I thought it was it was kind of silly, actually. The devil, our friend Ig, charms a snake to climb down his gullet. Apparently he's afraid of snakes.
See, I thought that was awesome. I thought that was awesome. I liked that, because...
Okay, well, I have a question for you. What did you think about all the cartoon devil stuff that was going on? Now, granted, this is a book about the devil in us. You know, literally,
funny.
Like
I enjoyed that.
It was kind of funny.
I enjoyed that.
And I thought, for the most part, it worked. But every once in a while, the funny kind of worked against the overall mood of the book. Which, while you're right, it is kind of it's extremely darkly humorous. But when he burns up in the car and he comes out with his red hue and he's completely bald except for his pointy little beard, and then he finds a pitchfork and a cape.
I love that.
And I just thought, okay, this is actually lightly humorous, not darkly humorous, this particular element. And then,
well, you know what?
He puts on the blue dress and he makes the devil in the blue dress joke.
I like that. I was waiting for that.
Sure.
The devil is punny, and literally that figure of the devil, that cartoonish figure. I mean, that was a if I'm remembering this correctly, it is a fairly stock character in
Passion Plays,
yeah. And he becomes a comic figure.
Mm-hmm.
Be made fun of in a way to disempower him.
Yeah,
and I think that's exactly what Joe Hill was doing there, which I.
Yeah,
enjoyed.
You know, that actually makes sense. That's a good argument. It occurred to me as I was listening to this that Joe Hill must have been working somewhere in the back of his mind. He was adding certain elements and certain characters that could translate pretty easily into Passion Play, sort of allegorical figures, like the character of Mary, Marin, is
Mary.
is Mary, but is Ig is that little red devil that's sitting on your left shoulder. If that's the case, then Mary is the little white angel that's sitting on your right. It's the expression of all the better nature in him. He is.
But I think what's interesting is what he's saying. What is Joe Hill saying about the devil,
mm-hmm.
or a devil?
Good. I was hoping we can get to that. Because the ending of this book is really sacrilegious. Wouldn't you say?
Because he gets his reward.
Yeah, he gets his reward.
And you don't know who... Here's the thing. You don't know who made this happen.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know why this is... I was thinking about this on the way over here. It's like, did I miss something when I was listening to it? Because I did fall asleep a couple times.
Oh, no.
but not at the end. I thought, did I miss something? And because... Who did this to him? He's in the treehouse.
Yes.
He gets mad. The fire.
Yes.
There's a couple little figurines.
Yeah. Well, he makes a great big tall wish, basically, as he's leaving the treehouse, that he be empowered to find Marin's killer.
Right. So who blessed him with this? Was it the devil? Was it God?
Was it an alien?
What was it?
I mean, well, think of all those figurines that were in there. There's an angel figurine. There's crucifix in there. There's a little alien. There's a devil. You don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know.
And so what I find interesting is that what the devil really becomes, if you think about it, is a truth magnifier. Not the truth, but a truth.
Yeah. Truth magnifier and a force of justice.
And a force of justice. Which, in the traditional biblical idea of Satan, was, that's what Satan was.
Yeah.
And Lucifer actually was, he did not want to bow down to humanity.
Yes.
And so he's sometimes seen as a figure of, kind of, a weird figure of justice in a way, or...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he makes this... at one point, Ig preaches a sermon to the snakes.
Yeah.
A sermon to the snakes. And listening to that sermon, I thought, this is really convincing.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking this is really good writing, because I'm pretty sure... that we're not supposed to believe this. But at the end of the book, I'm not so sure, because it gets his reward. He even gets, maybe in his dreams, maybe in his dying dreams, but, you know, I don't know. He gets Maren back, and she's this red-haired angel of flame, a demon, more or less.
Or something.
Or something. Probably not a demon. But in part of it, in his sermon there, he explains that that Satan is part of God's system. Like I said, he is the bringer of justice and punishment.
Well,
in this case, the revealer of truth.
Well, in Job, Satan was, that was Satan's job. He was an avatar of God.
Uh-huh.
And maybe Ig is sort of a Job figure.
Yeah.
All these things, these tragedies befall him.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's right. I mean, they come raining down. No, I thought this was a very sophisticated book, kind of tackling some of the same themes that that Philip Pullman in his famous trilogy sort of takes on. Maybe not in such a grandiose fashion, certainly a more jokey fashion, but the themes are still there.
Joe Hill is more jokey.
Joe Hill is more jokey.
Well, and the thing about this Ig character is he's really alone.
Yeah,
figure this out. He has to figure this out himself.
Yes.
There's no guidebook. There's no.
Yes.
Nobody visits him to tell him what to do or to explain anything. He's just conjecturing. Groping all the way.
Yeah, and you know, and failing and faltering. He gives in to his worst impulses.
Favorite thing is when he pushed his grandma.
When he pushed his grandma down and breaks her freaking face. That's awful.
But it was
It stays awful.
But it was kind of funny.
Well, I know she was a bitter old lady.
She was.
And she'd been faking a bad hip for years because she liked being pushed around.
Yeah.
In a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, she's gonna be in a wheelchair now. Ugh. the one character who comes off more or less morally unscathed is his brother, Tony,
Terry.
He's just an average. You know, he has your average moral mix. He doesn't have any really super dark secrets, except for the fact that he knew that Ig did not kill Maren. But you know, he's been manipulated, been backed into a corner. He really didn't have any choice, as far as he could see. He could have been a bigger man, but you know, he doesn't have any super dark secrets.
I don't know if he could have been a bigger man. And I guess he could have told Ig and then let Ig figure out
what to do.
Really, he was, you know, set up.
He was perfectly set up.
There really was nothing courageous. I don't think.
No, I mean, he got a pass.
He tried to kill himself.
Yeah, he got a pass from me. Whereas a lot of the other characters did not get passes once you found out their dark secrets.
Like who?
Oh, like grandma, like his mom.
I didn't kind of understand. I mean, they really did think he did it.
Yeah, you understand. I mean, yeah, you're right. You understand all these people. Harry never loses faith in Ig, whereas everybody...
Because he knew.
Because everybody else does.
But he doesn't lose his faith because he knew. Because
he knew.
Because Terry knew the truth.
You're right.
So there is no faith to lose. He just knows the truth. The parents don't know, and...
Yeah, they just assumed that he did it, because he was always a weird kid.
I kind of liked the, Marin's dad.
Yes.
Because he, you know, when Ig figures out, this is where it got weird.
Uh-huh. Like
the cross on, the cross off.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so when he figures all that out, and he tries to go and talk to Marin's dad.
Uh-huh.
And Marin's dad sees him in the car and just freaks out.
And goes
and runs out of the car, just running around
and screaming. Devil, it's the devil.
No, he doesn't see the devil. He sees Ig.
Yeah.
Thinking Ig is, just Ig as Ig, but he thought Ig was already dead.
Oh, right.
So, like, what's this guy doing here? And then Ig figures this out, takes the cross off, and then is now Ig the devil.
Yeah.
And now the guy can relax. And then you find all these truths, and he believes Ig. And just that he's living with this, it's that whole thing about, you never really know what's going on in people's lives, really.
You really don't.
You really don't.
That's the thing. That's probably the
you only get to see what people show you.
Show you. Well, you only get to see what people do, and by doing, I mean like opening their mouth and telling you, but also they're just like their nonverbal actions. But what they're thinking when they're not around, you don't know. That's the thing that I think is my biggest takeaway from this book is that really driving that insight home. That you don't really know. Like I said, the best expression of that was early on in the book when he's going to go home and he's going, like, and grandma's there, and he has this lovely memory of grandma and how comforting she is and her wonderful smell, and then she just freaking unloads on him.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was really something. I wonder what my grandma thought about me. I guess I don't want to know.
And there's things you shouldn't know.
You shouldn't know.
Well, and that's the other thing about this devil, really, is that, isn't it, you know, he could use that, his forceful, manipulative nature to direct a lot of possible outcomes.
Yes.
Once he figures out that he could do that.
Yes.
And he actually ends up showing mercy, if you think about it.
Frequently, yeah.
To a lot of people.
A lot of people.
To Marin's dad.
Yes.
I mean, it's a strange mercy because he says, leave your wife.
Yeah.
Shave your head. Go do what you want to do.
Yeah.
He does that with Griselda.
Gail.
It's not Gail. I know it's not Gail.
I know it's not Griselda.
It's Grimaldiel.
Grimaldi.
That she...
Jerry.
That she rework her life, you know?
And yeah.
Well, do things like, quit your job, but don't do this, don't do that, go do this.
Treat yourself like you're worth a goddamn.
Here, steal my money, go.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and I want, you know, if you looked at it from one angle, you would think that was wicked, but really it wasn't.
It
was a different narrative.
Yeah, it seemed to me like a pure good.
Or even when he sets up the two policemen, I think that's when he realizes something, because he's spying on what's happening at the river, and he sees those two policemen going at it, which he sort of set up in the beginning,
thinking
they'd kill the crap out of each other,
and
end up revealing their natures and becoming lovers.
Yes.
And he's like,
well,
there you go.
There you go. Bam.
You can't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's true. Well, just getting back to that, you know, you don't know what people really think about you, but I would argue that, you know, it doesn't matter. In those scenes, you know, later on, after when he comes back and he's able to protect his influence on the members of his family, and they talk to him, they're very concerned, and it's utterly convincing, and you believe them that they really are concerned for him, and they want
They really are.
And they really are. It doesn't matter those things that you think in your darkest moments, it doesn't matter. It's what you do. It's what you actually say.
Actually, I think that's, yeah, that really shines through on this.
Yeah, and that's
like what makes you think isn't enough.
No, what you think is not enough. And
because what we think is we think everything. But we can only do a few things.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And maybe that's more of our truer natures, you know?
Yeah. Or don't do things.
All right. Yeah, there's things we refrain from doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was a very wise book. I mean, these messages, these lessons are as old as Shakespeare or older.
Oh, well, Job.
Yeah, Job. Yeah, Job. Exactly.
What's his name?
Gilgamesh.
Gilgamesh.
What is this? He's making a stabbing motion, Gilgamesh.
one last thing is as I was sort of listening to about the character as he finds out the real nature of his friend. I mean, he finds out he kills the girlfriend, right?
Yes.
But then he also touches him, and that's how he gets to know the whole backstory.
Yeah, where he...
And that this guy has been playing him. That his generous nature towards Lee was so innocent.
Yes.
You know?
Innocent as in easily duped, easily betrayed.
Right.
But the fact that
was crushing to hear that. I mean, as I was listening to that.
But then the fact that you find out that Lee has been using him not so much just as, you know, having this convenient friend around.
But also as his moral compass.
As his moral compass. What would Ig do? How am I going to fully...
Very Dexterish.
It's very Dexterish. That's what Dexter does.
Except Dexter has more of a conscience than Lee does.
He does. Dexter just doesn't believe that he has one.
Right, exactly.
I thought that was really interesting that Lee modeled himself after Ig. At the same time, he was despising him. The entire time, he was despising him. So that he could blend in with normal people.
Right.
Fascinating.
Which he used as a cover, to.
Yeah. But then when you get in his head and you hear him, that whole dance he does around Mary, Marin, where he thinks that, this is really good plotting and writing, because you can see how Marin is giving him all these signals that aren't really signals.
Right.
But a guy in a certain horny state of mind is going to pick up every one of those things and think she totally wants me.
Well, yeah, haven't we all done that?
Oh, yeah. I know. That's why it's so well done. But when the whole thing unravels and he realizes what's actually going on, that he thinks that she's been playing him this whole time, and as certain low orders of the male of the male sex will do, he freaks out and, you know, she's dead. And
right.
A rock on her head.
But
what she wanted, actually. That was another shock.
Yeah.
She wanted to die quickly.
Yeah.
Oh,
she did. Hmm. Did he kill her?
You know, I listened to that and I thought it may have been an accident. He may have pushed her. You know, that whole thing. He pushed her and her head hit a rock in a certain way.
And then he
had his way with her. But yeah, but
as
you know,
her eyes are rolling back from the seizing.
Yeah, exactly.
The best sex of all, seizure sex.
Sweet seizure sex. You.
It had to be said.
It had to be said. So yeah, you don't know, but accident or not, it would have been the end of his life. There's no way, even if he hadn't. And then of course, you know, he's, you know, gung ho.
Seriously though, he could have said she fell, hit her head.
Yeah.
There was no proof that she fell backwards.
Yes.
It's easy to see. He had to take it that next step.
Yeah, but he didn't want that whole Ted Kennedy Chappaquiddick thing hanging over the rest of his political career, so he went and he started to play the situation.
Because he hated Terry.
And because he hated Terry. And he wanted to get his rocks off.
And he wanted to get his rocks off.
So, yeah, I know he's the lowest form of human being. It was a hard scene. I thought for a while that we weren't going to actually be subjected to it, but in the end, it was tastefully done.
It reminded
me. Those scenes are hard to write.
It reminded me of Lovely Bones.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It did. It's like, you know, it doesn't get right into the nitty gritty pornographic filthiness of it. It just right up into it, right after it, or you lighting it, and that's how you do it. You write that kind of stuff, I think. So, good for you, Joe Hill.
And you know, there's that other scene where he tries to save the kid at the foundry.
Uh-huh.
Who's being spit and burned, and he thinks he's doing
An
act of good.
Yeah, I know.
And then it turns out
that he's just undergoing an initiation for the swim team. Yeah.
And you know, I thought that was
pretty funny.
Well, it was funny, but it was like, you know, it was
very ironic, yeah.
We don't know what the acts of good could be, acts of wickedness. Our acts of wickedness could possibly be good. I mean, just turned everything on its head.
It's that's a lot of what this book is about. Is about turning our expectations on its head.
So who do you think granted him this process, this gift or whatever, this curse? Do you think it was Satan? Do you think it was God? Do you think it was an alien? Who do you think it was?
It's
Marin.
It's unknowable. It's you know, maybe the strength of their love. Who knows? That magical treehouse, which apparently we're supposed to understand.
What is that?
Well,
what is that alluding to?
We're supposed to understand that this treehouse is the tree
of the mind.
It's built in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah. Okay.
It's Eden. That treehouse is Eden.
Right.
And getting into that treehouse, you are in a state of innocence. Leaving the treehouse, you are fallen creatures into the world of knowledge of good and evil.
Which is what he gets.
Yes.
He loses, I mean, he really loses his innocence.
Really loses it.
I mean, he starts to lose it when she breaks up with him.
Yes.
Because his innocence is also very one-sided. He can only see his side of the story.
Yes.
And what the knowledge is he gets to see all the sides.
All sides of the story.
All the story, right?
Yeah.
Which is really powerful and confusing and a little helpless.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's that actually works. I hadn't really thought of this all the way through before, but that actually glues the book together in a much more profound way, that the whole book is about the knowledge of good and evil, and about about the fall from innocence. You know, he's such a sweet young man.
He is
so. I mean, he's not like stupid. He's not like
he's
not Buster Brown.
Giving and he wants to. He loves people. And
yeah,
he loves them full throttle.
Yeah, exactly. And he always assumes the best in people. And in the end, that stance is kind of naive, because the world is not like that, and the world will chew you up, and it does. Chews them up real good.
Right.
You know, this is one of the rare Necronomicon discussions that we've had, in which the book has gotten better
as we're talking about it. Yeah, I'm so thinking about Joseph Campbell right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a lot of the big myths are about losing your innocence.
Yes.
You cannot go, when you go into the world as an innocent lamb, you will be slaughtered.
Yeah, you'll be consumed.
And you'll be slaughtered many, many times over, but that's where wisdom comes, and you earn that, and that is priceless gold that you don't give away.
Yeah.
And really, that's what Ig earns.
Yeah.
Is the terrible wisdom.
Terrible wisdom.
And knowledge.
Yeah. About everybody he loves.
And about just life in general.
In general.
And our actions and...
Yep. And, yeah.
And what we think isn't always... What we want to believe isn't what maybe is...
Yeah.
What's happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to face that, bite into the apple or whatever, I mean, it's an act of courage.
Yeah. It's an act of courage.
Which is very... seditious.
Yeah. So in the end, then, this book is not it's using the Christian story, the Saturday morning cartoon Christian story, but in a much more sophisticated way. I mean, in the end here, Joe Me too. Ig is a force of good. Not perfect good. There's no...
Not squeaky, saccharine...
There's no...
Treacle.
There is no reason good. And there's no excuse for him to push Grandma down the hill. He's not forgiven from that. That was a bad thing. And he's not even, in the end, particularly sorry for doing
that. No, he's not. And we're not sorry for it, either. That bitch deserved it. No.
But he becomes a force of good. And when he retreats from the story, and he and Marin retreat from the story, and you get that denouement where it's just Terry and Gallifrey, Gallipoli.
Gandalf.
Gary. you get a glimpse of him. Terry thinks that he sees him sitting at the hospital, at the end of his hospital bed. But
and he hears that trumpet.
And he hears the trumpet, yeah.
Yes, the other reward it gets is he gets to play the trumpet.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't able to do that.
Yeah, I know. He finally has a lung full of breath, finally. Hot breath. Smoky breath. Yeah.
Is he a force of good, or is he a force of truth, or of possibilities? I mean, really, is it good?
Yeah.
Is he a force of good? I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Good. I mean, just thinking the whole thing through, that aspect of the devil is not necessarily.
He's a misunderstood.
He's gravely misunderstood. And you know, there was that whole Satanism movement that was a big deal in the late '60s. The Rolling Stones were into it, and there was a Church of Satan in L.A.
Yeah.
Run by Anton LaVey, and that was the Church of Satan of Lucifer, the Lightbringer, the Truthbringer, the Morning Star, which was kind of related to the whole Prometheus myth.
Right, and that the snake was actually part of God's plan, that humans were supposed to bite into the apple.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it jumps in and swims around in some pretty heavy theology and morality here, and it does a good job. I mean, it makes you think about it in a good way.
So was it horror?
Yes.
It's a weird tale.
It's a weird tale. It's a
morality tale.
It's a weird tale. It's horror. A lot of people date horror back to I like to think it's like Faust, or Dante. And this is straight in that line of demonic morality tales.
I could totally see this done as a pageant play.
Oh yeah, passion play, you mean?
No, a pageant, not a passion play. A pageant. You know those plays they would do in the carts. Pageant plays.
Oh yeah, like the Wakefield.
You know, like
the Wakefield passion pageant. Yeah, pageant. You're right. Pageant plays. Yeah. Yeah, there's Noah, Noah's Flood, and Everyman, the most famous one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could totally see this.
Yeah. Which is where Faust came out of, I think. Makes me want to read a recent one that it's been recommended to me by people and by
People Magazine.
It's people I know it's Clive Barker's Damnation Game, which is supposed to be a retelling of the Faust legend.
Well, there's a Clive Barker play about the devil, which is really good.
Really?
Well, is it that time of the podcast?
I don't know. I feel morally shriven. I think it's time for me to sin a little bit. And to do that...
Have a little Underwood's deviled ham spread. Some deviled potted meats.
And devil
of a cocktail.
Eggs. So it is indeed cocktail time. Whew, all right. Well, here. I don't know about this one. All right. All right. So I watched you mix this, but so tell me what you did.
Well, it's very simple. It's a shot of 151.
Yeah, 151. Yeah, so 151 rum. Make
151
sure to keep it away from open flames.
Yeah, and then a squeeze of lime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, how I would do it, how we've done it, is 151
mm-hmm.
with a shot of habanero Tabasco sauce.
Yeah, some kind of some sort of like super hot sauce.
Yeah,
like habanero if you're really brave.
And we've been sucking the lime and then doing the shot.
Yeah. So
that's it.
Here we go. Quick, give me a match. I think I can actually blow smoke. So what are we calling this again?
We're calling it The Devil Made Me Do It.
The Devil Made Me Do It.
It's not delicious. It's just
it's
makes you tell the truth.
It's something you don't enjoy, but you probably deserve. Chin chin. Okay.
All right.
So
do you want another shot?
Another shot?
Yeah.
I'm gonna wait a little bit.
All right.
Until I can feel my tongue.
Because I don't want to fall down the stairs down to the Forbidden Book yeah. cellar.
All right. Hang on to the railing. Seriously.
Right, let's go.
Okay. Here we go.
I already know what the book is.
Yeah, well, you seem to have a really good idea. Why don't you just tell me what the book is?
It's one of the first times. I can count them on one hand the number of times I knew what the book is. Like, and it was my idea.
All right.
The book is, let's head on over to the G's.
This is the alternate history section.
Yeah. This is Seth Graham Smith's Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Excellent. Well, you know, I've always wondered, you know, about what Abraham Lincoln really did.
I know the truth. Finally,
the truth about Abraham Lincoln.
We know he
Lincoln.
Slept with other men, but what else did he do?
What else did he do? We are about to find out. I'm very excited.
I hope it's
about
good. I really hope it's good.
I'm
sick of reading shit.
Well, yeah, you're right. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm kind of glad we're reading this because this is like this new genre of horror.
Well, he
novel.
Wrote the.
Pride and Prejudice. Sense and Sensibility and no Pride and Prejudice and
Zombies and
Sense and
Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
So now we have Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. So do you think he's going to write Hamlet Ghostbusters sometime?
I don't know.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, I mean this is a whole new subgenre. I mean, it might be burning itself out. But there's a lot of these books out there now.
Is there? What else is there?
There is book of short stories about zombies in Jane Austen's world. What the hell is it called?
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, Sense and Sensibility to Sea Monsters. And then there's I can't remember what it was called. It has a book trailer out there. If you go to Amazon and you type in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, I'm sure it'll recommend to you this other book. You know, they always look like Penguin classics with like a little bit of gore. So
the audacity to hope and exorcism.
Audacity to hope and exorcism. Sure. Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah. Yeah. Moby Dick versus Jaws. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn in Wonderland. So anyway, so Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
That's it.
Not to be confused with the movie Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, which I recommend, but only tentatively.
Or Buffy Vampire Slayer.
I know. Another fine historical document.
Finally the truth
can be told. So, all right,
let's
get out of here. See, what you been up to lately?
Yeah, you know.
Stuff. That is all I have.
That's it.
We have slayed another one.
Let's put a pitchfork through it.
And stuff a snake down its gullet.
And we don't even need to cut off its head.
No, you can just set fire.
Just burn it alive.
Yeah, just burn it alive. All right. Bye. Yeah.
picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. 400 children and the crap in the field.
The crap in the field?
Yeah.
The crap in the field.
I've had some bad times. Lived through some sad times. This time you're hurting won't heal. You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille.
Joe Hill.
Joe Hill.
Oh, that's good.